And welcome to the show, everyone. I'm your host, Dr. TJ, and with me, as always, is Aaron.
Hi.
And we have a hi. Every time, every show, same thing. With us is Aaron. Hi. So today's show, we are going to, I think it's going to be a good show. We're going to talk about the links between inflammation and depression. And so there are lots and lots of people out there that have depression. I think this is, I don't think that everyone really truly understands, you know, all the things that can play a role or be factors in developing depression. It's definitely something that can be very debilitating for those of you out there suffering from it. I'm sure those of you that are suffering, you already know how difficult it can be. And hopefully we can shed some light on that for you. And also for anyone who doesn't have it but knows someone who does, may help you better understand what it is that the person is actually going through.
Yeah, I think it's amazing how many people come into the clinic. And a lot of times it's not for depression. That's not like the key thing, the key reason why they come in. But I mean, the vast majority, I would say, of people are on some form of antidepressant.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. What's really sad is there's this idea out there that depression and other mental health conditions are caused by an imbalance of chemicals in your brain, especially serotonin and norepinephrine, dopamine. All these things are out of balance, and so therefore it's a chemical imbalance that's causing your depression. And it's so ingrained in our systems and our beliefs that, I mean, people get really mad if you ever question it.
Yeah, well, I know, and we've done a show on depression before, and I can tell you we got a lot of feedback from people that are, you know, like, what is your basis? And we, you know, we responded to every single one.
Right.
I mean, you know, we do have, there's our reasons why we're saying what we're saying. We're actually reading the research, and what everyone believes to be the case is not necessarily backed by what research has shown us. And so we're just going to kind of talk about that today and the fact that there is a huge link between depression and inflammation in your body.
Right. So antidepressants, I mean, they're a huge, which again, based on this whole idea that we have a chemical imbalance, it's a $10 billion market value just in the U.S. all by itself. $10 billion. That's a lot of cash, right? And according to the CDC, there are 11% of Americans over the age of 12 that take antidepressants. It's the second leading second most prescribed medication behind statins or cholesterol-lowering meds. I mean, it's a staggering number of prescriptions that are written.
And they're close. I mean, so one and two have gone back and forth.
If you throw in all of them, I mean, it's a lot. It's very close, back and forth. You're right. But in 2010, right, you can sometimes find data, but more recent data is kind of all over the place. It makes it hard to make any, you know, solid statements. But the 2010 data, we can say pretty definitively, there were 254 million prescriptions written for antidepressants in 2010. Now, think about that. There's only 320-ish million people in the country. So two-thirds of them had a prescription written for an antidepressant. That's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, and it's actually, I mean, it's getting harder and harder to find someone who has not been prescribed antidepressants at some point in their life. And if you think about that, most people who are prescribed antidepressants stay on them indefinitely.
Right.
They just never get off of them. And I think what's scary, I mean, and we know that, you know, Big Pharma has been a big part of perpetuating this idea that this is a chemical imbalance. And if you think about it from that perspective, I mean, just kind of open your minds and think, okay, is there a reason why we all believe this? I mean, because obviously most people walking around out there have not actually read the research. They just know what, you know, they've been told. If you think about the fact that antidepressants and cholesterol-lowering medications are the two biggest prescribed, I mean, on the one hand, you can say, oh, well, those are two, you know, well, they must be the two biggest problems in the U.S. You know, that must be why it's happening. But if you stop to think about it, could it also be that depression, I mean, yes, there are people who are severely depressed. And, you know, I mean, they, and we get a lot of people off antidepressants, but depending on, I mean, it really does depend how long does that take and, you know, what exactly.
How long have they been on it?
And, yeah. And
that's
what exactly
they
have going on. Is it just depression? Are there other things? But there are a lot of people who have, you know, like a mild depression and they just keep taking it because no one ever took them off of it. Or they just, you know, when we start looking at what they're doing on a daily basis, it's like, okay, you're in a toxic relationship or you're doing, I mean, they're doing, trying to medicate themselves out of a bad situation, which is never going to happen. But antidepressants are prescribed instead of someone actually saying, it's actually normal for you to be depressed in this situation. You need to get out of the situation.
Right.
And then when you look at, and then with cholesterol lowering medications, I know we've talked about this before, but they keep lowering what level of cholesterol is too high.
Right.
So more and
more people. Used to be 300, then it dropped to 240, and now it's 200.
Right, which is wrong. And I think we've talked about that. That's, you know, it's not a good idea. We actually do need cholesterol. But it, you do kind of start to look at this and think, okay, the people who are benefiting from this information are the ones who are really giving us the information, which is, you know, all the pharmaceutical companies. It's questionable. It just is on its face when you start looking at it from that perspective. And that alone, I think, should give everyone pause and, you know, to think, okay, maybe I need to take a step back and listen to find out if there is a different reason for this.
What's very interesting, so for those of you who follow us on our Facebook page or Instagram, you know that a few weeks ago I was a presenter at this wellness conference, and another presenter that was there is Dr. Kelly Brogan. And for those of you who don't know, she's a psychiatrist out of Manhattan. She's brilliant. She's written a couple of books. Check her out.
Right. We may be having her on the show.
Yeah. And one of the things that she said, I was standing in the back of the room when she was giving her talk, and one of the things that she said that she gave pause, it was great. She said, psychiatry and antidepressant medication, it's the only medication that she knows of, and I had to stop and think about it too, and I think it's the only one I know of. She's like, it's the only thing that's prescribed without any testing.
Right.
There's nothing tested when someone is put on antidepressant. It's really just symptoms. And, I mean, if we apply symptomatology to other facets of our healthcare model, if I were giving medications based on solely on symptoms, the only thing I would be throwing out there is pain-relieving medications.
Right, because which that's is a, what happens.
And,
that's
and,
why pain
and GERD.
Relieving. Yeah.
That's why. That's what it would be. And because no one, you, and when you go based on just symptoms alone, you so miss the boat on so many things. I can't tell you how many people have come into the clinic and sat down. We've gone over all of their symptoms. We're like, okay, well, we need to look in these directions because these are things that that we're seeing. And then we run their tests and we actually figure out that it was something completely different than anything that we were thinking. But yet it was also something that had all of those symptoms that they were complaining of as a common thread.
Right. Well,
there are only so many symptoms that can be going on in the body, but there are a ton of different types or combinations of problems that can be going on. So if you just stop and think, but when she said that, she gave pause and people in the room like turned and looked at their neighbors and were like, oh my gosh, that's right. I mean, there was just like really quick like mumbling in the audience of the sudden realization that, wow, you're right.
And it's funny that you say that because that's kind of was my point. It was just made a lot more succinctly by her. But, you know, that people can come in for any different reason, you know, feeling depressed, and it could be any, you know, number of things. We don't look at that. We just look at, you know, I mean, medical doctors will just say, oh, they're depressed. They need an antidepressant instead of looking at, okay, what else is going on? I mean, I mentioned before we got a huge response the last time we did a show about depression, and a lot of people are, you know, contacted us and said, what do you do for depression? You say, you know, you're not for antidepressants, but what do you do then? And which is funny. I mean, and I guess, you know, it's on us that we didn't get this, you know, across any clearer, but the depression is a symptom of something else. So what we do depends on what the something else is.
Right.
What is actually causing it? It's, you know, it is, it like you said, I mean, it's like pain. I mean, so many different things can be causing your pain. We can't just treat the pain. We have to treat what's causing the pain. Right. Get rid of that and the pain will go away.
Right.
I mean, that has to be how we start looking at our health if we're going to actually be healthy.
And if we really get into like what the research says, you mentioned the research earlier. I mean, if we just took someone and we lowered their levels of norepinephrine or serotonin or dopamine, it doesn't really produce depression in a human. There are quite a few studies that actually show that, the same thing. And kind of across the board, it really only happens in about 25% of the population. When you lower those levels of neurotransmitters, do they actually create depressive symptoms? And so that's just, that's potentially throwing out there the idea, heaven forbid, it's just an idea that maybe as many as 75% of the people taking antidepressants don't really have a chemical imbalance. What if it's something else going on? What if it were just something as simple as decreasing in inflammatory response? I mean, that's my whole thing. And some of the newer research out there has actually kind of coined this new term or this new theory. And the theory is the immune cytokine model of depression, which is cytokines are these chemicals in the body that allow our cells to communicate with each other. And so it's how we allow our system to talk to one another. And there are these cytokines in our immune system, and they can drive inflammation. Certain ones can drive inflammation, and other ones are anti-inflammatory. And so what if it's really not depression? Is this just miscommunication of our immune system, and we've got our immune system all out of whack? That's a viable theory and a great body of work that's out there. There's so much coming out of this new theory and idea, and we see the same thing happen in our clinic. We help these people get their inflammatory response down, and all kinds of things across the board get better. So we've got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about the connection between depression and inflammation. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just joining us today on the show, we are talking about the connection between depression and inflammation. And before the break, we threw out this idea and theory called the immune cytokine model of depression. And like we said before, it's just this concept that depression may be a symptom of chronic inflammation. And I couldn't agree more with this theory. The idea of chemicals being out of balance just doesn't hold true when you really get into the research that's out there on depression.
Right. And a lot of people, I think, are going to balk at this idea simply because it's tied up in a nice bow, right? Oh, yeah. Well, it's chemical imbalance. Let's balance the chemicals, and then it goes away. And it seems like if that's all that you're told, I mean, on its face, it seems to make sense, right? I mean, just as a layperson, you don't know what chemicals are going on in your brain. So, oh, okay, they must be out of balance. And so let's fix that with this medication, and I'll be okay. Of course, the issue is that not only does the research not show that that works,
The answer is to take a pill the rest of your life. That doesn't make any sense either.
Right, and from a practical standpoint, we know it doesn't work.
Right.
Most of the people who've been put on an antidepressant will tell you it doesn't work.
Or they have to switch antidepressants. They're on this one for a little while, and they're like, well, it's not working anymore. Well, we have to switch a different one. Well, if that chemical were out of balance and you fix that chemical, that should work forever.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, a lot of people will say, well, it worked at first, and now it doesn't work anymore. Or it's not working, but the doctor said I need to make sure to give it time so it builds up and it starts. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't.
No, that's like saying, well, you're in pain, but you got to take this pain medication for 3 weeks before you're going to notice any improvement.
Right.
No. If it's a chemical imbalance, it's a chemical imbalance. It should be immediate.
And, I mean, that gets frustrating anyway. I mean, we have that.
I mean, there's not common sense, just isn't very common anymore.
Right. That is true. I mean, well, you know, we get it. We hear this a lot. I mean, and it's really frustrating to hear it about antidepressants, but, you know, we hear that with a lot of things. We get a lot of patients that come in from different doctors, and they're like, well, I saw him for a year, and he kept saying, well, things are going to get better. Things are going to get better. And then they come to us. I mean, at some point, we have to say, okay, you know what? Maybe we need to take a step back and just take a different approach. And I think that's where, you know, antidepressants are one of the, you know, a good example of that. But we talk about that a lot, about we've got so many people out there, be them medical doctors, alternative medicine practitioners, I mean, all sorts of different people who are trying to push people forward instead of taking a step back and saying, why don't we actually find out what's really causing your problems?
Right.
And make sure...
It's a novel concept.
Yeah, make sure you're on the right path. I mean, we've said this before on our Facebook page, I know. Like, we need less motivators pushing people to keep going and more educators teaching people to turn around and find the right path.
Yeah.
Because, I mean...
The worst thing you can do is run the wrong direction another day.
Right. Because then you've got to not only backtrack to where you started and then go the right direction. So you're, like... twice as far back as you would have been if you'd just figured it out from the beginning.
Right. Yeah, so getting back into a little bit of the research, so this there's a review written by several authors, but Burke was the main author, B-E-R-K. They basically put this evidence together that supporting this idea that there is a connection between depression and inflammation. And they have five key points in that. One, depression is often present in acute inflammatory illnesses. So you get something acute and inflammatory going on, people are depressed. Higher levels of inflammation increase the risk of developing depression. Administering toxins that provoke inflammation to healthy people triggers a classic depressive symptoms. A quarter of the patient, this one I found very interesting, a quarter of the patients who take interferon, which is a medication that's given when someone has hepatitis C, interferon itself causes massive, massive inflammation in the body. Those individuals, 25% of them, who develop major depression, and they're linking this now to this inflammatory response. And then remission of clinical depression is often associated with normalization of inflammatory markers. Like I said in the first segment, if you can get the inflammation down, people get better across the board and report all kinds of improvements, including mood and depressive things. They're just like, oh, wow, I feel so much better. I can't believe this.
Right. Right. No, I mean, and we see that all the time. And like I said, depression isn't generally something that brings people in. It is occasionally. But a lot of times there are other issues. And then they're shocked when their depression goes away. And that's why, I mean, you know, again, you figure out what's actually causing the depression and you fix it. Well, not only is their depression going to go away, their pain may go away, their anxiety, their, you know, I mean, all of these different symptoms end up going away that they, you know, it's shocking to a lot of people that they seem to be connected. But inflammation causes a lot of issues in the body.
And this has been known since the 80s. I don't remember exactly when Prozac was approved. 83 or 87, somewhere along in there. But in the early 80s, researchers figured out that cytokines produced a huge array of psychiatric and neurologic symptoms, basically that mirrored the characteristics of depression. So, I mean, they've known this for years. It's just, again, like Aaron said, it's been packaged and shipped to us with a bow that, you know, that depression is caused by a chemical imbalance when really it's just an inflammatory response.
Right.
And that's a chemical imbalance, I guess, too. It's just the wrong, we're talking about two different sets of chemicals.
Chemicals, exactly.
Completely different. I mean, we're talking gasoline and water.
Right. And I really don't know, I mean, I don't know if it's that a lot of the medical doctors don't know this. I mean, that's my guess, actually. I mean, they've been taught that it is a chemical imbalance.
Yeah.
And so they're doing, I mean, you know, I don't think anyone's doing.
They're not trying to do any harm to anyone.
Absolutely not.
By any means, no.
But those who do understand, and I mean, you know, Kelly Brogan being one of them, who actually is saying, wait a second, this doesn't make sense. There's a huge backlash. I mean, there's a huge, you know, like upsurge of support from the ground of people saying, oh, my gosh, thank you so much for saying this because that makes sense. And I understand what you're saying. But from the medical community, there's a huge backlash. I mean, because it's not easy to go against what everyone else is thinking. And
Right. The
pharmaceutical companies have a lot of pull, and they are not happy when someone's out there saying, hey, what you're saying doesn't make sense.
Right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, we've talked on this show before, many, many times we've talked about inflammation and how that's a big piece of basically all modern chronic disease. You know, at the turn of the 1900s, the number one killers were infections. Now, the number one killers are all chronic disease, basically. Things, and most all of chronic disease is completely preventable. If you're doing the right things, chronic disease is preventable. And I mean, we're talking about things like diabetes, Alzheimer's, heart disease, autoimmune, allergies, asthma, arthritis. Pick a chronic disease. All of these things are preventable, but inflammation is the big driving force that's causing a lot of this. And so, I mean, really, is it really that big of a step for us to say that depression could also be caused by inflammation? I don't think it is. I mean, if we look at modern diet and lifestyle, I mean, it's full of stuff that causes inflammation and therefore causes disease. I mean, we eat more packaged foods, more processed foods, and more sugar, all of which are literally like throwing dry leaves on a fire, than we do our, you know, nice, clean, organic, raw vegetables and our grass feds and no antibiotic meats. I mean, right. We're just, that's not the stuff we consume. I mean, so many people nowadays don't even cook at home.
Oh, so, yeah. I mean, that's definitely true. I mean, we hear that all the time when people find out what their food sensitivities are and they're like, well, what do I eat now? Well, I mean, pick a meat, pick a vegetable, and they're just like, wait, so I have to cook all of the food? I mean, it's such a weird concept for people because they don't cook at all.
Right.
And so, you know, it's just amazing how many people rely completely on eating out. And if you're relying on eating out, unless you're eating at some very specific restaurants, you're probably eating inflammatory food.
Oh, you're absolutely eating inflammatory food. You walk by some of these restaurants, you're breathing in inflammation.
Well, and think about the fact that, you know, I mean, you mentioned sugar and we've talked about this before, but I mean, a lot of the foods, I mean, and now having a newborn, you know, kind of looking at, okay, you know, what are we going to end up, you know, when we start feeding, I mean, actual food, like what do you feed a child?
We feed him steak.
Right. Well, I mean, a lot of the beginning foods are all sugar.
Yeah.
All sugar. And I mean, so all of these parents doing, you know, what they think they should be doing for their kid, and you think that that's not going to hurt a child as they get older.
Yeah, long term.
Because it is going to cause inflammation. And,
right.
You know, I mean, so we're starting them so young on inflammatory foods.
Right.
And then they've got a taste for it, which, I mean, don't we all, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, everybody likes sugar. I mean,
right.
If somebody doesn't like sugar, they're just flat out lying to you.
Yeah.
They're just liars. You can just tell them, look right at their face and say, you're a liar. Because, I mean, it does taste good. It enhances the taste of certain things, but we consume so much of it.
Right.
150 pounds per person per year. I mean,
right.
That's just insane.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, where it gets frustrating is not so much when it's in things that we're like, oh, okay, I'm choosing to eat something sweet. It's all of the hidden sugar
right.
that we thought was healthy or we didn't even know it was in there, and then all of a sudden it's like, wait, that's causing inflammation, and that's where I think it gets frustrating.
Right. I mean, we've been talking here about diet. I mean, diet is a huge cause of inflammation and
yes.
depression. I mean, just going on with this just for a few seconds, we got to take another break here in a minute. But we consume foods that are just driving inflammation, things like refined flour, the excess sugars, our trans fats, our rancid fats, chemicals, preservatives, name it. There's so many things that have infiltrated our food supply that has completely changed it from what we ate even 125, 150 years ago. It's a completely different diet. I mean, we just don't get the low inflammatory foods like, you know, our omega-3 fatty acids. We don't consume fermented or fermentable foods. We just don't consume that anymore. So, well, we got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about causes of inflammation and depression. We're going to include things like obesity and gut health and stress. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back, everyone. If you're just tuning in, today we're talking about depression and inflammation and the connection between the two. We spent a lot of the last segment talking about diet and how, you know, diet drives our this inflammation, and inflammation is kind of at the root of so many of our chronic diseases that are plaguing this country right now, and not just this country, the world. I mean, we're seeing this stuff happening everywhere. But moving right along, another driver of this is obesity. I mean, obesity is just really the...
And a lot of these are kind of connected.
Yeah, they're all kind of connected. Obesity is really kind of a consequence, if you will, a side effect of what our modern diet has become. I mean, we're eating more sugar, we're less active, we're just causing ourselves to gain weight. And if someone is obese, that is a strictly inflammatory state. It's also estrogen dominant, but we're not going to get into hormones today. It's an inflammatory state. I mean, there are numerous studies out there showing that there are higher levels of inflammatory cytokines with obese people, and weight loss in those same individuals shows a decline in those inflammatory cytokines. I mean, this is a big, big deal. I mean, obesity is very much linked to depression. And I mean, granted, that link can be, there's a lot of factors and parts and pieces to that. But inflammation is a big part of this. So that's obesity. Another one is gut health. And this goes right along again with our food supply and what we're doing. I mean, we have massive disruption in our gut microbiome. I mean, the use of antibiotics is just gone. It's a lot more than it should be, I feel. I think that doctors are prescribing antibiotics at the drop of a hat, and then they're not doing anything to help a person repair and heal that gut after, you know, dropping a nuclear bomb in there.
Right. Well, and I mean, when antibiotics are necessary, and, you know, I think we've said on the show before, like, antibiotics were, you know, it's great that we have them. I mean, it's
right.
One of those, you know, prescription medications that has done a lot of good, but there isn't any. I'm just shocked that doctors have not yet gotten to the point where they're at least saying, hey, you need to protect your gut while, you know, or after you take a round of antibiotics.
Right. Well, they don't. I think that just comes down to the fact that they don't even acknowledge that there is such a thing as leaky gut. They just don't even talk about it. They just kind of ignore it.
They will.
And blow over.
Soon, when a leaky gut medication comes out.
Oh, yeah. There have actually been 7 completed studies on it.
Yeah,
so I already know.
Yeah.
But I mean, when we have a leaky gut, these endotoxins can get through. These things are called lipopolysaccharides, or LPS. And when they get into our bloodstream, they just cause us to create inflammatory cytokines like they're going out of style. And we just set ourselves on fire is really what we're doing. And I mean, when we have changes in our bacteria in our gut, that is associated with major depression. And, you know, we have, you know, whatever levels we have of a neurotransmitter in our central nervous system. I'm having a hard time getting this out this time.
Yeah.
In our central nervous system, we have 300-500 times more of that neurotransmitter in our gut, because that's where these neurotransmitters are made. These things are made in your gut. So if your gut is broken, your brain is broken.
Yes.
It's pretty simple. Moving right along to stress. Huge, huge cause of depression. The link between stress and inflammation, there's not as much research out there, but stress is a huge, huge factor for people. I mean, an ability to modulate your stress is imperative. That's why we really, really encourage people to do everything that you can to decrease your stress level, whether that's, you know, meditate, get a massage, sit in a quiet room by yourself, do something that you enjoy, anything that takes you away from, you know, the massive stressors in your life. Just turn off your stinking cell phones. I mean, that's a constant stressor as well. I mean, these things are just really, really stressing our systems out. I mean, there have been research studies on, they'll take a person's cell phone, set it beside them, monitor them, and then they'll send them a text. And as soon as the person gets the text or hears that little, whatever their chime is that identifies that they received a text, their heart rate goes up, their breathing rate goes up, their whole body becomes stressed while they, you know, before they get to address whatever came into them. So, I mean, it's very interesting how stressful just a device can be. So there's that. And then that just takes us, stress moves us right into physical activity, because one great way to decrease stress is to become physically active. And we all know that in this country, we are nowhere close to as physically active as we should be. I mean, there are research studies that show that just getting up and being active is as important and beneficial for someone suffering depression as any antidepressant medication.
Right. And I will say, I mean, it goes, you know, I mean, there is a link both ways. I mean, so we know that physical activity lessens depression, but depression also makes it, I think, more difficult to
yes.
exercise.
Yeah.
And so, I mean,
it's a two-way street.
Right. And so knowing that, I think, sometimes helps, because we have a lot of times we'll talk to people and they'll say, I can't, I have no desire to exercise and I hate it. But you're more likely to feel that way if you're depressed. As strange as it sounds, I mean, if you can just force yourself to do it, in a short period of time, you'll start feeling better. And
right.
that's why people who exercise crave that exercise.
Right. And exercise really floods our body with anti-inflammatory cytokines. So we're putting the fire out by exercising, provided you're not going out there and trying to run a marathon on your first visit
right.
or you're on your first treatment, you know. Then there's sleep. So all of these things, again, are tying together. Sleep is so important for our bodies to have a chance to heal and repair. And I mean, if we're chronically sleep deprived, there are studies out there that show sleep deprivation increases the inflammatory response in the body, and therefore it increases the depression that takes place in the body as well. I mean, it's pretty clear.
Well, and I think that the sleep deprivation,
you're having a hard time too.
Yeah. I think it's rubbing off. Problems are rubbing off on me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, okay, so with us having a new baby, I can speak to this. I've usually been, you know, I've always been someone who really prides myself on getting, as you know, enough sleep. Like, that is a top priority for me.
She still gets plenty now. I'm the one that has to get up.
right. Yeah. One of us is nursing the baby, so I will let all of you decide which one of us that is. Because
it's not me.
No, it's not. but it does make a difference. And I think, you know, while I always knew intellectually that made a difference, I'd always been someone, especially, you know, having three autoimmune conditions, I knew how important it was. Well, there's sleep has always been a priority, but not as big of a priority as like feeding a hungry baby. And so this going through.
Is
this,
it the screaming that makes you?
It is. I mean, yeah.
It's
and
the
probably
screaming
my own
that
hormones,
we're trying to stop.
But yeah. But it's funny how sleep deprivation changes everything. And, you know, and I haven't had any trouble with depression, but I will say I have more trouble making myself get any sort of exercise. I have more trouble not eating sweets and other inflammatory foods. I mean, that's why I say it is all connected. I mean, all of this kind of feeds on each other. And a lot of people then find themselves so far down the rabbit hole that's why they end up in our office and we kind of, you know, hold their hand and guide them back through it. Because
right.
sometimes you need someone to just help get you on the right path.
Right. That's right. Now, moving on from sleep, there are these things called chronic infections. They can be anywhere in the body. These are things like cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr virus, toxoplasmosis. There are just so many things. I mean, it can be hidden dental infections from, a dental procedure that went wrong. I mean, there's so many different things. And these infections they're just constantly causing this low-grade chronic inflammatory response in the body that you're having to deal with. And of course, that's going to lead to a depressive episode because your body's just having to work overtime to deal with something that it shouldn't have to. And then moving into, I mentioned, you know, the hidden infections from a dental procedure, cavities. That's another one. Having cavities or periodontal disease, another thing that causes an inflammatory response. I mean, there was a huge study that they had. It was like 80,000 people. When the dentists do a study, they do it right? 80,000 people. They found that people with depression were more likely to have tooth loss even after once they controlled for all kinds of other demographic and health factors. They still found that people that had depression were more likely to have tooth loss. So these things work both ways, people. The street's a two-way street. It's not one thing causes another. They can both cause each other.
Right.
So, and then we've got to take another break. And the last piece here that we want to talk about is vitamin D deficiency. I mean, we've talked about this on this show before. The national average for vitamin D is deficient. The national average for vitamin D level in this country is 27. The lower limit of medical range is 30. So we are, as a nation, deficient, and that's sad because it's an easy thing to test for, it's an easy thing to supplement with, and it's an easy thing to get your vitamin D levels where they should be.
Easy and inexpensive.
Yeah, it's very inexpensive, and there are so many immune benefits of vitamin D. Vitamin D deficiency is an inflammatory situation, and some people actually believe that vitamin D deficiency is a response to chronic inflammation. That's very intriguing if you start thinking about it this way. And that's something that we see, too. Our more inflamed patients have even lower vitamin D levels. It's really pretty crazy. And one of the things that we do is we really try to get that vitamin D level up as quickly as we possibly can. All right. We got to take another break. When we come back, we are going to basically go through some final thoughts and give you a couple of recommendations that you can do to help deal with inflammation and depression that you may be dealing with. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just tuning in, you missed a great first three segments where we were talking about inflammation and its connection with depression. I thought it was a very good show. There are so many things that
I love
are,
how you always grade our paper and it's always 100%.
Yeah. Yes. I'm not biased.
We always did very well.
We did a great job. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. this whole concept of inflammation and depression, it's not anything new. Like we said before, back in the 80s, researchers figured out that inflammatory cytokines caused depression symptoms in people. I mean, this isn't anything new. This was found out around the time that antidepressant medication started coming out. And so it just baffles me that we're still stuck in this depression is caused by a chemical imbalance. We talked about earlier that no one ever gets tested to find out if you actually have enough of these neurotransmitters. We test those levels to find out what's going on. Are these things out of balance?
Right.
Do you have too many? Do you have too little? What's the pathway? What's the process? Is there something that we can do naturally that can help you balance this out? What can be done? What's causing this? Why would this be happening in your situation? Are you exposed to things in your environment? Are you eating foods that you shouldn't be eating? Are you doing things that are driving this inflammatory response and this chemical imbalance? Honestly, we just, even when we do testing on the neurotransmitter levels, we don't really see changes in these people's neurotransmitter levels. The levels are relatively the same, but the inflammatory response is a huge, huge driver.
Well, and I mean, most people that we do this testing on and are shocked that the testing can even be done. They're like, no, I've never been tested for anything.
Right.
And I mean, these are people who have been on antidepressants or other antipsychotic medications for years. And
never,
numerous
tested.
Different kinds a lot of times and never have been tested.
Right.
I mean, that's crazy.
I don't get it. I just don't understand. But I mean, I think that people are starting to, at the grassroots level, like you mentioned earlier, I think people are starting to wake up to the idea that, hey, you know what? This actually isn't fixing anything. There's no long-term plan to come off of the medication.
Right. And I think that people are realizing, yeah, it's not actually helping. They're realizing more and more that they're not alone, because I think for a long time, a lot of people, I mean, were not talking about the fact that they were on antidepressants, so they didn't want to tell anyone, hey, I don't know that this is really working. They'd only tell their doctor, who would say, oh, we need to then switch your medication. It's okay.
Right.
You know, we'll just switch it and you'll be fine. And they keep switching and switching. But then they're also, you know, that's why we're out there. And there are a lot of other practitioners who are out there also who are looking at this. It's kind of the same thing with the whole thyroid issue, that are looking at it and saying, wait a second, mainstream medicine has this way wrong. And so people are starting to understand, okay, maybe what we always just accepted as true isn't true. Now what are we going to do with the actual information instead of what we've always been told is the information?
Right. That's exactly right. I mean, this is a huge shift from looking at depression as this chemical imbalance disease to possibly just a symptom of something much bigger or a much deeper underlying issue. And if we can get to that and fix that, the depression just goes away by itself. It just fixes itself.
Or not even. You mean, you say a deeper issue. It could be the result of so many different things. I mean,
could just be the 150 pounds of sugar that they're eating every year.
It could be literally like the lettuce that you're eating that you have a severe food sensitivity to.
Yep.
I mean,
right.
It could be that simple, but nobody ever tested
it. I'm sensitive to lettuce. It's beautiful. I don't have to eat salad.
What do you have against lettuce?
It's great. It's great. Oh, I have a problem with salad.
Okay, whatever.
Well, you know it's true. This is one of those things. I mean, we have guys that sit in here in the office literally looking at their food sensitivities being like, how come broccoli can't be on my food sensitivity list? How come I have to be sensitive to chicken or whatever it is?
Right. Or dairy.
Or dairy. Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, this is just thinking about this concept that there may be something else that's driving. I mean, this opens up all kinds of different ways to treat depression. It opens multiple doors of being able to go in and say, okay, well, maybe then we're dealing with this issue or that issue or something else, and that's what's driving this depression. It's actually not any kind of depression at all. That's my take on it for whatever it's worth. I mean, I think people are, you know, looking for better and looking for more a better understanding of what's going on with them. I think there's, like I said before, I think they're starting to wake up and they're looking for, okay, how can I get myself well and do this without having to take, you know, a three pill combo of antidepressants or a two pill combo of antidepressants, because the first one worked, like you said earlier, worked for a little while, and then I had to add another one, and then I had to change them, and then I had to get another one, and then I had to change. And it's obviously it's not working.
And I think, you know, I mean, finding, of course, you know, the stigma with depression and other, you know, mental health issues has, I think, lessened. I think we've gotten to a point where, you know, I mean, there isn't that stigma attached to it, but at the same time.
And she's talking about the stigma like, oh, there's something wrong with you is why you have that. We've kind of discarded that. I mean, I remember that being younger and finding out that, you know, I had a friend whose parent had depression, and it's like, all it became this big hush-hush thing that nobody ever talked about. And
but, I mean,
that's not really the case anymore.
It's not, but at the same time, I can say that, you know, I mean, when patients find out that there is something physiological, if this is inflammation that's causing depression, you know, there's something physiological that's going on. This isn't just, you know, like something went wrong with you. I mean, it's something that is fixable. It is something that isn't like, you know, I mean, you weren't just made incorrectly.
Right.
I mean, it has a profound effect on people to say, okay, wait a second, this isn't something that I need to be, you know, like embarrassed about.
Yeah. So kind of, you know, like we've talked about for the show, I mean, we've got to wrap this up for today, but, you know, one of the big pieces is, you know, get an anti-inflammatory diet and lifestyle going. We've talked about them on the show. Eat more, eat cleaner meats, eat healthier, eat more vegetables, and figure out what's causing your own inflammation. Look for help. Find a functional medicine practitioner, either us at the Institute of Natural Health or someone else like us. There are many of us out there, not as many as there should be, but there are several of us out there, and we'd be glad to help. So that's about all the time we have for today. I want to thank you all for tuning in. Find us on the web, theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. Follow us on Facebook or Instagram. We're constantly putting information out there. If you'd like, give us a call at the office. Our number is 314-293-8123. Send us an email. We love hearing from you. And for Aaron, I'm Dr. TJ. This has been Wellness 101. Thanks for listening.